Blog Talk Radio.
And you are here today because anyone who ever bet against you was wrong. Because any obstacle that ever dared get in your way, no matter how invincible it may have seemed, it was defeated by your innate power to overcome. You are here today because you are powerful beyond measure. Stop denying yourself of this truth. Your greatest self has been waiting your entire life. Don't you dare make it wait any longer.
A Better Today welcomes you to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free with host, speaker, writer, and personal coach, Steve Maraboli. Steve and his expert guests take you on a quest for truth and highlight philosophies and strategies that help you release your greatest self. It's time to focus on your potential instead of your limitations. Here's your host, Steve Maraboli.
Hey, 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 welcome, welcome. You're listening to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free. I'm your host, Steve Maraboli. As always, you are welcome to participate with this show. No matter where in the world you're listening, no matter how you're listening, you can participate through AOL, Instant Messenger. The screen name is ABT Radio Show. That's one word, ABT Radio Show. You could also participate through our website, empoweredlivingradio.com. That's empoweredlivingradio.com. And just tell us who you are, where you're from, and feel free to ask a question to myself or my guest. And today joining us, one of a listener favorite, and I know one of my favorite minds that are writing and sharing today, Amit Goswami. Amit is an international best-selling author, and we're looking forward to another conversation with Amit. But of course, first I want to say hello to the A Better Today community. Keep doing what you're doing. Never, ever, ever, ever forget that power of one. One kind gesture, one person at a time, one day at a time. Get out there and participate. Don't just talk about change. Don't just talk about change. Get out there and participate. Be the answer to your prayers. Be the answer to your dreams. Recognize that you are the point of origin between your thoughts and your dreams and reality. You are the one who births it into reality. So be more than just the dreamer. Be the one who brings that dream to life, and you do it simple with action. As Gandhi said, be the change you wish to see. Get out there and do it. You gotta be it to see it. Don't forget that power of one. One kind gesture, one person at a time, one day at a time. If you want something improved in your community, in your family, in your relationships, in your career, don't just want it. Be it, do it, one at a time. Never, ever forget that power of one. And thank you for all of you who are out there participating. It takes bravery. It takes bravery to embark on that journey towards your goals and dreams. It takes courage to stay on that path. And the bridge between the two, the bridge that merges them both, is commitment. Be committed to being the change you wish to see. And don't forget that while you're doing that, this New Yorker is sending you all kinds of love and inspiration. I want to get to the show. Amit Goswami is a best-selling author. He's a retired professor of theoretical physics. He's the author of, oh, wow, I mean, if you're familiar with the quantum activist, God is not dead, just powerful, powerful, visionary, insightful, and scientific work. Amit Goswami, for me, is one of the great minds alive today, and it's always an honor to have him on the show. Amit Goswami, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
Always good to be here, and I thought that today would be a great opportunity to talk and to pick your brain. It seems to me, especially here in the United States, we're in an election cycle, and it seems that more and more there's a divide, not just a divide in politics, but a divide in ideals and beliefs, and you're seeing a bigger rift between the science world and the God world, the rift between the objective reality and the subjective experience. And I thought having you on to have a conversation about this would be really, really helpful to hear what you think and your take on our understanding of God, science, and this universe. And it's a pleasure to have you on. I would love to start by asking you, from when you started, how has your idea, when you first started reading or from even however you were brought up and whatever ideologies you were brought up, how has your idea of God in this universe, how has it changed or been enhanced?
Well, you know, I grew up in very confusing times, as, of course, people right now, because they're also growing up in very confusing times. The confusion comes from the battle of two worldviews. You know, science has made a lot of inroads, but still the religious worldview in the Western world, that would be the Christian worldview, that dominates the Western world still. Roughly something like 60% of people still believe in God in America. That's a good sign. That's a good thing. Unfortunately, it comes with certain dogmatic aspects of Christianity, popular Christianity especially, and God gets this fatherly, white man, bearded, majestic personality sitting on a throne in the sky, in heaven, or whatever you call it. And that picture of God doling out punishments and rewards on the judgment day of your deaths, it just does not sit very well with the educated mindsets. But not mindsets are all sophisticated, so naturally it does make sense to the unsophisticated ones, and very much sense. So there is about 20 to 30% of people who are quite sold to that picture. And then another 30 to 40% of people who know that that picture could not be right, but could not give up the spiritual experiences either, because they know that there are intuitive moments, those are the best moments of our life. There is freedom to choose, and we make choices, and we can take responsibility for our life. These people know that, and these people have been creative. They know that they touch God's power, downward causation, in those moments. So they cannot give up on that either. And scientists, unfortunately, have sided with a dogmatic worldview also. This is the tragedy of our times. When I started doing science, you know, I went into science at age 14, which surprised me, because I grew up in a religious household, Hindu religion, slightly more esoteric, philosophically disposed than Christianity, perhaps, but not much. You know, it's still the emphasis on rituals, still the emphasis on simplicity. You know, my family also talked about heaven and hell a lot, the simplistic understandings of it. So, although my father never did, he was a spiritual teacher himself, and he knew better, and he tried to teach me a little bit of the non-dual ideas of Hinduism, but, you know, I mean, they passed me over because I was just too young to understand. So I became a materialist, very much enthusiastic about science, and but materialist not in the same vein as scientific materialism. The hope still was, you know, even when I was in graduate school, even when I was fully entrenched in the American academic system, even then, I had a couple of colleagues with whom I would talk about how to establish a scientific basis for ethics. And we didn't dare to imagine that there would be a scientific basis for ethics, if not God itself. We are not totally materialist in the sense of believing in the dogma of scientific materialism, that everything is matter. And at best, things like spirituality are epiphenomena, secondary consequences of our survival instinct. These are concepts that have clouded the issue, and concepts that we are really zombies, robots, computers. They really don't help establish our help with our struggles as a human being to overcome our base instincts. We want to be better because we hear the intuitive call from the higher consciousness to be better. That just as you say in your preamble, I really love your preambles always when I come to your show, that be the change that you want to see. And we all want to do that, who has the capacity of thinking And it's not just taking refuge in Jesus or refuge in some religion. We have to work for it. And this understanding is lacking in the religious people. But what is lacking in the scientific people equally much is that we could not be zombies. And without freedom, we cannot even take responsibility for what we do without freedom to choose. So we got to have freedom. And where does that freedom come from? It could not come from interactions of elementary particles, which are so removed from our reality. It just couldn't be that way, obviously. So, but it is not so obvious to believers, just it is not so obvious to the Christian believers to disbelieve their literal picture of God as they see it. So we are stuck between two dogmas, and this is showing up right now in the political arena, of course. You know, Democrats are solidly on the side of the scientific dogma, scientific materialism mostly, although it would be political suicide to deny God, so they never do that. On the other hand, Republicans are solidly on the side of God, but it's a Christian God, bearded white guy, and that kind of God does not allow them to support women's rights or gay rights or anybody's rights if it's a minority, non-white. So, you know, we are stuck between rock and a hard place. And the tragedy of it is that for 20 years, there has been this integrative worldview. And quantum physics has been around for 100 years. If people paid attention to quantum physics, long ago we could have discovered that there is downward causation. Long ago we could have settled these issues if scientists really put their attention to it.
And you know what's funny is that, well, it's actually not so funny, it's actually more tragic, is that we were on that path to there. You know, Amit, as I learn and I get more, delve deeper in the scientific world, you start realizing that there is, between religion and science, there is dogma on the extremes of both sides. And what I find is that even when we talk about God, how it, somewhere along the lines, that concept of God was actually hijacked by religions. It wasn't the religions that they took that self-aware universal God and they put it in the context of their own theism, and it actually diluted the power of that God. And you find that back in the day, I mean, there was Democritus in ancient Greece. This is 300 BC, Democritus is theorizing about atomic levels. He's saying, you know, everything looks solid, but it's actually these small, invisible particles that are actually making up everything. And then here comes the Holy Roman Empire, and they burn down the library and make you you're a witch or a demon if you're partaking in such nonsense like saying silly things and anti-God things like the planets revolve around the sun, and saying horrible things like that would get you killed back in the day. And it seems like there was a hijacking that took place. And slowly now, by my own idea, I feel like that dogmatic religious sense is on a demise, and God is making a comeback.
God is making a comeback, and hopefully this time with the understanding that the material world is also important. I mean, you cannot just blame the religious side. You know, this is the tragedy of it, as I was saying, because the religious side tries to hold on to certain concepts which are very precious to us, namely that spirituality is important, that paying attention to the to something that is our higher level of consciousness, a higher power, is important, except that they make the mistake that this higher power is separate from us. It's not separate. This question of non-duality is the real question, and we didn't have experimental support for it until very recently. So we have to really find these reasons too, and forgive both sides of the dogma. Neither of the two sides knew that God is not really separate from us. God doesn't have to be, because there is this quantum non-locality, signalless communication, which may make communication possible without signals, without dualism between God and the human being, and that because they don't really have to be separate. They don't really have to be. They can be one, and how the mechanism is, we now know through quantum physics. And scientists likewise have to recognize that it is not dualism, and God can be admitted without getting rid of science. Both science and spirituality find happy reunion. Let's use that word. Religion usually, actually means reunion. So let it be a happy reconnection, reunion of the two great concepts that humanity can rightly take pride of, because we can understand the universe that we see outside of us, and we also can understand the wonderful universe that you see inside of us. God has developed the concept of inside, went outside from inside, became foreign to us, and we are reinviting it back to ourselves, our inside, and similarly we are doing the same thing with the external universe that seemed outside, but now we are welcoming it back to inside. So this outer and inner together, Jesus said long time ago, when you shall unite the inner and the outer, the above and the below, and the male and the female within you, then shall you enter the kingdom of God, that is. And kingdom of God here is nothing but that wholeness.
You talk about, in one of your books, you talk about this self-aware universe. And I'm always intrigued in that self-aware universe. Is it a self-awareness as we would consider ourselves to be self-aware? Does that make it a universe of purpose, of goals, and direction?
Yes. If we recognize that the universe is self-aware to us, then our purposiveness in the most ideal form, we can see that is the thread of universal purpose that runs through us. And what is that purpose? It's the purpose of our evolution. And what is the purpose of our evolution? To see the greatest aspects of God's existence, what Sri Aurobindo called the supramental aspect, and Plato called the archetypal aspect, the stuff that we strive for, every human being, love, beauty, justice, truth, abundance, this kind of thing, goodness. These are the basis of our civilization, and to embody them is the goal of evolution. Until we have embodied them completely, all humanity, our evolution will not be over. How long will that take? It will take forever, because there are subtler and subtler levels of being in these archetypes, and I cannot even fathom. I have only touched a few, but I tell you this, as you have, we both know in our heart that this is the greatest search one can do. If I have loved for a few seconds at a time every day, I know that my life is worth living. If I am for truth every day for a few seconds, I know that my life is worth living. And same thing for all of this, justice, abundance. These are all wonderful archetypes to follow. And this is what people want to do in their heart anyway. And we now know with quantum physics, we now know with the theories of creativity and experimental data on it, that we can do it. It's within our power. We have the process in our hands. We know that we can develop a life with doing and being, and how that works, and produce a dynamic to discover the new, to discover this, the way to get into these archetypes.
So, folks, we're having a great conversation with Amit Goswami. Amit is a best-selling author. He's a former professor of theoretical physics at the University of Oregon, and, of course, one of our fan favorite guests. Feedback's coming in like crazy. I promise I'll get to some after the break. But again, I want you to make sure you check out Dr. Goswami's site, quantumactivist.com. That's quantumactivist.com. So, Amit, we talk about this, and when you do that spiritual CPR in your life, and you recognize that it isn't just about wanting, it isn't just about praying, it isn't just about meditation, but it's becoming the reflection of that in the physical world. It's taking action on it. It's moving towards a goal. But so many people get disempowered to a point where they don't move. They become dreamers, but not the ones who bring that dream to life. They pray, but they don't participate in the answer of their own prayers. What do you think disempowers the people for them to forget how powerful they really are?
Well, because you're polarized. You know, we become polarized in either doing or being. People who, once they get into being, they think that being is the solution to everything, because being feels so nice. You get, you know, some of the meditation practices take us to very good places. And perhaps that's one good way of doing meditation or enticing people to meditation. For example, TM practices takes you into a very good place to be. But you know, any place you can be ultimately is going to be a known place. It can be a very blissful place, but it's a known place. And anything that is known is not that, is not divinity. Anything that is known cannot be divinity. It becomes conditioned within us. It's just a memory of the brain that you're eliciting. You are making your mind conjoin that brain state, and therefore you feel good. You're making a vital body conjoin to that brain state, and therefore it makes you feel good. Vital energies are flowing, but not because of something new, downward causation, God's power coming into you, but it's just brain's power relived. And that is nice, but it's not the end of it. This is the mistake that religions make. This is the mistake that even TM practices, well-minded as it is, they make. And this is the mistake that transpersonal psychologists make, because they all refuse to look into the dynamics of creativity. Without quantum physics, you could not do that, because we could not understand why is it that doing and being has to be combined. Because it is in being that quantum possibilities, the world is as possibilities is apparent. It's in being that the world of possibilities exists. If we are doing, then that world comes into manifestation. So being is where quantum waves become more and more and more and more, bigger and bigger waves of possibility. Possibility pool becomes bigger. But unless you do, what happens to this possibility pool is that you become full of the conditioned stuff, full of that brain stuff that I was talking about. It can be good stuff, so you feel good. It does not have to be depressed stuff, like Freud talked about. You know, that's, of course, that is true if you don't do any of these things, meditation and relaxing and stuff. Then it becomes full of that sexual stuff and anger stuff and suppressed stuff and depressed stuff and all that. So meditation is good. I'm not saying it's not good. But even with meditation and good states coming up in the unconscious, it's still the known. How does the unconscious get into the unknown? Unconscious has to get into unknown, and you have to do it by stoking it, stoking it with challenges, stoking it with conflicts, stoking it with ideas that brings up questions in you that you do not understand, ethical questions, questions of creativity, questions of how to save my ecology, questions of how to do the best in a political system which is so polarized, questions about economy, how to save the economics, questions about physics. What is this wonderful world that I cannot understand, that people are so divided to make a worldview about? What is the truth? How do I love? This kind of question will set up this stoking. Everybody knows that if you have to build a fire, and time is coming in all over America for our fireplaces to be lit up again. And we know what we have to do to keep the fire going. It's not enough to light the fire. It goes out because of the same thing. The known is cinder. Known is, after all, just ash. And we have to stoke it and bring new power to it. Stoke it with doing. So it's both doing and being, do-be-do-be-do in practice. And that is what people have been missing all this millennia. Either be or do. That has gotten the go, and we have not balanced it.
So it becomes like anything else. You know, I find it becomes like anything else, where it is that balance, where there are, it seems like there's different levels, different dimensions of truth, but yet both valid truths that is up to us to find that balance, as if we're the point of origin for that balance.
Right. We are the point of origin. You said, talked about self-aware universe. One has to recognize within one's bones, within one's being, that we are the basis of that self-awareness of the universe. And we are responsible for increasing that self-awareness, taking that self-awareness beyond what is constantly being conditioned within us. Always asking the question, not this, not this, not satisfied with the known, freedom from the known, as Krishnamurti called in one of his lectures, freedom from the known. We need to exercise freedom from the known. And it's paradoxical. Even that phrase does not describe the whole truth of creativity. Because when we do discover it, we want to share it with others. And in order to communicate, we have to express the unknown in terms of the known. It's really not only a freedom from the known first, but then it becomes a dance of the known and the unknown. And it is that dance that makes life so exciting. Why every time we two come together, why does so much vitality flows in the conversation? Because we both have touched that place in which this drama between known and the unknown is played. And this is what makes it so wonderful, so exciting. And if our listeners can get into that, I know they do already, otherwise they would not even be listening to this conversation. After all, you know, doing is perfectly comfortable to some people, being is perfectly lulling and sleep-producing to some people and comfort-producing to some people. Why get the discomfort of do-be-do-be-do? Because it leads to this ecstasy of creativity, creative experience, because it leads to this wonderful capacity of making changes that we want to see around in our world.
You know, it's fascinating because when we talk about being this point of origin and our own experiential truth, it seems amid that the universe will be as self-aware as you are. It becomes
absolutely
a reflection, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. The universe will be as self-aware as we are, and therefore we have the responsibility to take it as far as we can go and stretch it as far as we can be comfortable with. It is stretching beyond the zone of comfortability. People, you have to do that. You have to be a little uncomfortable, and it cannot be helped. You've got to have the creative tension in order to get into creativity. And you know, time after time, don't worry if you have a heart problem. Don't worry, because this kind of tension, this kind of stress is good. Creative stress actually prolongs your life longer, makes life longer, because our mechanism is built in such a way that it can handle it. It's not like the kind of stress that takes you into worry, that takes you into repressed emotion. It is not that kind of thing that diminishes your lifespan. This is the stuff that actually proven to be to increase your lifespan. So this is the stuff, this is the juice of life. It really is the basis of creation and creativity and a creative life and change.
Don't shy away from it, because that's exactly it. Creative stress is enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Really, really is. Folks, we're having a great conversation with Amit Goswami. Dr. Goswami is an internationally best-selling author. Check out his website, quantumactivist.com. That's quantumactivist.com. I'm going to get to some feedback as soon as we get back from break. What I'm actually going to do is the break will take, and I thank you, Mike in Plantation, Florida, always a great friend of the show. And how's it going, Mike? And Mike brought up a great point. He said, you know, let's play the Neil deGrasse Tyson conversation during the break, and then have Dr. Goswami answer the similar question. So we'll do that. We're going to take a couple-minute break. During the break, we're gonna play that sound clip of Neil deGrasse Tyson talking about what inspires him and the most astounding fact of this universe. And when we get back, we'll ask Dr. Amit Goswami that same question. Well, you're listening to Empowered Living. I'm Steve Maraboli. We will be right back.
What is the most astounding fact you can share with us about the universe?
The most astounding fact.
The most astounding fact.
Is the knowledge that the atoms that comprise life on Earth, the atoms that make up the human body, are traceable to the crucibles that cooked light elements into heavy elements in their core under extreme temperatures and pressures. These stars, the high mass ones among them, went unstable in their later years. They collapsed and then exploded, scattering their enriched guts across the galaxy. Guts made of carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, and all the fundamental ingredients of life itself. These ingredients become part of gas clouds that condense, collapse, form the next generation of solar systems, stars with orbiting planets. And those planets now have the ingredients for life itself. So that when I look up at the night sky, and I know that, yes, we are part of this universe, we are in this universe, but perhaps more important than both of those facts is that the universe is in us. When I reflect on that fact, I look up. Many people feel small because they're small and the universe is big, but I feel big because my atoms came from those stars. There's a level of connectivity. That's really what you want in life. You want to feel connected. You want to feel relevant. You want to feel like you're a participant in the goings-on of activities and events around you. That's precisely what we are, just by being alive.
To Empowered Living Life, the truth and being free. I'm your host, Steve Maraboli. Check out our website, stevemaraboli.com. You could check out empoweredlivingradio.com for every single show we've ever done. And also, don't forget, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on YouTube, we're on Pinterest. So check us out. We've got stuff all over the world. Thank you to everyone who shares this show. The show is listened to in over 100 countries. We make every single show we have ever done 100% free. The only thing we ask is that you share something that I say or one of our guests says that inspires you or empowers you. You could be sure that you are in a circle of people, that there are some people in that circle that will also be inspired and empowered by what you've heard. So share in the course of your day when you're emailing funny pictures or interesting stories or the news or posting your statuses on your social media. Also, feel free to share one of our links. Share the link to empoweredlivingradio.com. You're listening to Amit Goswami. Share a link to quantumactivist.com or to one of our guests' books or whatever it is. The point is, we make this available 100% free so that you can share, so that we can empower, inspire, inform, and educate as many people as we can, because there's nothing better than a hug of inspiration and information. So that's what we're doing. So please, thank you for sharing empoweredlivingradio.com. We're having a great conversation with Dr. Amit Goswami. Dr. Goswami is an international best-selling author, retired professor of theoretical physics. You can check out quantumactivist.com. It's a very active website. Amit's got a lot of things going on. He has seemingly endless enthusiasm and insight that he shares. So check out quantumactivist.com. So Dr. Goswami, we went to break and we played a clip from Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he was answering what he felt was the most
astounding fact of this universe. And I want to ask you a similar question. What for you and your studies and experience and research, what has been the most astounding fact to you about this universe, this life, this experience of life?
Well, you know, the whole thing started to me like a big intrigue. I tell this story often to my audiences that turned my life around, which was I was at a conference, nuclear physics conference, giving a talk, and my talk didn't at all satisfy me. Instead, I started becoming jealous of other speakers and how their talks are being received and the attention they're getting. And in that jealousy energy, after spending the whole day and part of the evening, at about 1 o'clock in the morning, I became fed up with my jealousy, went outside, and the universe sent a message to me. And that message was, why do I live this way? I became determined to live in an integrative way and reflected outside and in my work. And ever since I found my direction to work, I found the purpose of my life. I found the meaning that comes from it. So it's the integrating. It's the that was the surprise that an integration is possible, because you know when we see these differences, and these differences seem like they're so entrenched. You know, like the outer outside. And inside, that world is so different, our world of thought, our world of feelings. So we get either stuck into either a dualism, that this inner and outer are separate realities, and somehow the two can never be bridged. You know, that Rudyard Kipling poem, East and West, it's another way of talking about them. Some people find it in the same kind of division we have created between the male and female. You know, this recent presidential debate got stuck in that male-female debate. We cannot integrate. It seems that it's just the divide is just too big. And same thing has happened with spirituality and science, materiality, outer and inner. We cannot integrate. But what I find the most amazing thing of the universe is that it is all integrated anyway. It's all a whole. It's just a show, this outer versus inner, transcendent versus immanent, male versus female, emotions versus reason, conditioning versus creativity. They are all important. They are all important ingredients. It appears to us to be separate, but when we start integrating is when we start feeling the whole, when we start feeling blissful, when we start feeling the excitement of the world. The point is that the world is united, but it reveals itself as separate. To understand that separateness, embody it, as well as the capacity to live in the undivided whole every once in a while and be refreshed by it. We have a natural ability to do that anyway when we deep sleep. Computers don't sleep. They don't need it. This is a marvel of materialist science. Why do we need sleep at all? Well, we need sleep because we are not computers. We need sleep because we have to have a built-in ability of being in that wholeness. But when we start being in that wholeness, even when we are busy, even when we are into doing, that ability, which is the do-be-do-be-do life that I advocate, that it is possible to live this way, that it is possible to live in this creative lifestyle. You know, it would be boastful to claim such things, and I don't claim that I do it all the time, but, you know, it's possible to do it most of the time, and that is the most surprising thing in my life, that I never expected that a life can be like this, that a life can be lived like this. I'm not saying that anxieties and separateness don't enter. Please don't get me wrong. I'm not an enlightened being or anything like Jesus or a Buddha or anything like that. But I am a scientist. I am an ordinary person. But in spite of it, it's possible to live in a lifestyle where creativity comes in a natural way. And everybody has really that capacity. This I know. And therefore, I want to encourage, you know, your show is great because it says that, empowered living. What is empowered living? This is empowered living. Do, because the power of consciousness comes to you this way, in a regular way, regular fashion. You will not even know that it's coming. It's without effort. That creative moment will come and you get inspiration, and however you use it to change your life or to create a creative product, either way, you will be the winner.
It seems that in some ways that we function often as tuners, as radio frequency tuners, and occasionally and sometimes more deliberately are able to tune into the frequencies of that informational universe. Would that be an accurate description?
It is in a sense. I mean, but if you take out the dualism, it sounds a little bit like a dualism. We are just the receiving apparatus, and stuff is coming to us from outside. But what is coming from outside is also inside. It's coming from us only. It's just that in a higher kind of way, and this us does seem to be separate from us, but that separateness is not real. When we start believing in the separateness, we start having a ritualistic, hierarchical relationship with it. And that's the wrong way to go, because very soon we become sort of dependent on it. We think that just by taking refuge in it or acknowledging it, we are already serving the purpose, but we are not. By acknowledging it, we are acknowledging only what is already conditioned in us. This is why religions fail. They take too much into that receivership. After a while, you don't feel that you need to do anything. All you have to do is to receive. No, you have also to do. Otherwise, your reception becomes moribund. You receive only those things that you already have received. To receive the new, you have to do. You have to have action. You have to be the doer. You have to value the external. You have to value what is happening around your environment. So religions become too passive, and the materialists become too active, and the two has to come together. And so you have to recognize that, yes, I am the receiving radio, but I am also, in some strange way, quantum non-locality is a strange concept, I'm also the sender. I'm also the one who is sending, except that one seems to be a higher capacity, not usually available to me, and that is what creates the confusion.
So what does that mean? What does that do for our relationship to what we call people who are alive and people who are dead?
Well, so people who are dead has gone into that realm of wholeness. But a part of them is available, a part of them that learned, that had the capacity of learning, and that learning is non-local memory, and it's available to us. In particular, it's available in a linear chain. A certain portion of it is available in a linear chain to the same energy that lived as me. And therefore, you know, in quantum worldview, we have the theory of reincarnation quite well established. Of course, the data supports it already. So what life and death gives us the message that you have more than one life, so don't be so desperate about death. It's just a very welcome change, because it comes at a time when this body becomes incapable of processing much new. I mean, okay, I'm 75, I'm not there yet, very active and so forth, but I know in 10, 15 years, there will be a time when these facilities, abilities to hold this much tension, creative tension as it can be, it still becomes, you know, the body becomes a limiting thing, because some deterioration will take place. We call it arthritis, we may call it other serious disease, but those things will produce impediments. We have to go. And the ability to give up that attachment to the body and welcome death is very important. Reincarnation gives that solidarity that, yes, I will just come back later in another body, in another new body, in another new life, in new relationships, in a new world, and it's all good. And that that faith, that knowledge that science is giving us, reincarnational science, the solid establishment of it in our present worldview is extremely important, because that makes death a friendly event in our life, not a scary event in our life.
So does that also, I find in my own life, because I don't really dwell on the afterlife or I don't dwell on the year 2090 any more than I dwell on 1890, where I was before or after isn't something I dwell on too much, and it actually helps me focus on this I'm alive now and today. Today I have the opportunity to do something. I always joke around and say I'm not a psychic, and I don't know when I'm going to die, but I do know that today I'm one day closer, and I'm going to make this day count. Does understanding that for you, Amit, also make this expression of your spirit, this incarnation, does it make it more impactful for you, and is that why what inspires you to keep such a busy schedule?
Well, you know, that is true. You are completely right. But as I was saying, it as you get older, it will surprise you. And I guess you're much younger than me. You sound like one.
I'm 37.
Good. And I'm delighted. But when you get older, it will surprise you. It will surprise you that the acknowledgement that my life is limited, because people around you, some of my old friends have passed away, my parents passed away, my siblings are gradually passing away, and that gives you a feeling that, okay, so you are also going to pass away. All these wonderful people that I share my life with today in my traveling, and it is wonderfully exciting. You know, right now I'm in the middle of a conference in near Washington, D.C. in Virginia, and it's wonderful. It's a healing group devoted into Chinese medicine, led by a wonderful teacher named Master Lu, and this is all wonderful. I'm contributing to integration of medicine. It's wonderful. But in that also, there as you go older, there is a recognition that, okay, all this is going to terminate, and you as this person with this story that Amit Goswami has contributed to the world is going to end, and another story with some of the same powers, same knowledge, same wisdom, same abilities are going to reborn in some place that can give you a very much of a solidarity with the event of death. Look at today what is happening in the medical scene. You know, I worry about it sometimes, and so I know from personal experience talking to people what happens, because people are so scared of death. We spend more for healthcare in people's last 3 weeks than any other factor or any other period of their life, and that is a shame. We should not have to spend this much money for keeping people alive for only a few minutes, few days, few weeks. We really have better ways of spending our money, especially when it's coming from the government, especially that, because we are really literally taking other people's money to just live a useless life, which already has so many impediments. Arthritis, I already mentioned, but so many other diseases come to people, Alzheimer's. They don't even know what they're doing. Their memories, capacity is gone. So what is the purpose? And this healthy attitude towards death is extremely important. And that comes because in the older age, we do think of death. We cannot help it. And so, of course, we celebrate the living. We celebrate every day. You are right. But at the same time, we develop a high respect, friendly relationship with death as early as it is necessary. It's not necessary at 37, but it would be very welcome to do it starting at about the age of 70, I think.
So as people navigate now, and I can't believe how quick this show is going, folks, we're having a great conversation with Dr. Amit Goswami. Dr. Goswami is a theoretical physicist and best-selling author. He's written some fantastic books. She's also the video quantum activist, as well as the book God Is Not Dead. Make sure you check out quantumactivist.com. That's quantumactivist.com. You know, as people, Dr. Goswami, navigate through this journey of life, and especially now as they feel frustrated, they feel encumbered by their bills and what they perceive as their shortcomings and the stresses of politics and the stresses of credit and credit debt and illness and this company saying that this pill is great for you and this one saying, no, you should eat no meat, and another person saying you should only eat meat, and all these decisions, ideas, and people feel stressed and frustrated. What advice or insight could you give them to help alleviate that stress and build towards a more empowered way of life?
Well, actually, you know, it's quite simple. We are bombarded with all these advertisements because we are emphasizing material aspect of our life too much. So as we turn to our experiences and start valuing other realms of life, beginning with consciousness itself, our subjective experiences. So when it comes to subjective experiences, we start to give importance to feelings, meanings, and of course, the intuitive level, the archetypes, the values that we talked about several times. As our attention shifts to these things, the material aspects become secondary to us. These material aspects come because of an intrusion by scientific materialism in how capitalism works. These economics need to be changed too, and I'm doing that. I'm right now involved in a work on economics of consciousness that hopefully will arrive on the public scene in a couple of years. And I'm finding that the economics that Adam Smith developed in the 18th century is good as far as it goes. But it stops at the material needs and material gifts. You know, capitalism is the idea of put people's gifts and needs together, and an equilibrium would be established by the invisible hands of the free market. Adam Smith didn't know much at his time because there was not much known. Only Newton's physics was known. So, but he already knew that there is freedom of the will to choose. He knew that because he knew the value of creativity, innovation, all that he knew. He knew ethics, he knew that because he learned it from the spiritual traditions. But he did not know the integrative science. So now that we know the integrative science, we can value experiences. And if we bring experiences back into the economic equation, I find that all of our economic dilemmas that is facing us right now, how to get rid of recession, for example, this kind of deep recession that took place, great recession, we are calling it. It can be done. It can be done, but we have to start looking at the economic commodities very differently. And then they won't be publicized like that. You know, this is an aberration that anything can be sold by just repeatedly saying it. You know, a lie can be sold by repeatedly saying it. Rush Limbaugh really believes that he can sell people, too many people, about non-existence of climate change by just repeatedly saying it to people. And this idea has become very strong, that if you repeat a lie several times, it will take hold. And so these advertisements repeat their misrepresentations, not total lies, because they know total lies don't have any power whatsoever. It has to be based in a little bit of truth, but you can exaggerate the truth. And then the belief is that you can make anything sell if you just exaggerate, and that exaggeration will sell it, will put attractiveness in it. But it really not necessary, because you can actually sell, if you have substantial thing, then you don't need to do that. This idea came because people wanted to control people's behavior as consumer, because they were depending on consumption too much. But if we depend on creativity and innovation, then we are always putting up new stuff that will be exciting anyway. You need to sell if you don't have a good product to sell. You need to convince people with lies if you don't have the truth in your favor. But if you already have truth in your favor, you don't need to sell that way. And as that takes place, as this change takes place in our society, by empowered living, by living the truth, and which is what we are doing right now, right here. And if as that happens, as our listeners and readers and participants become empowered, and they less and less depend on advertisements to know what is good for them, the more and more they will connect with themselves. From their experience, they will know what is good. And there will be enough on the internet of truth, not just these lies hanging around of truth. And they will themselves be able to discern the truth. I don't have any problem discerning between advertisements because I know when something brings true to me and something doesn't. I know that because there will be a feeling associated with the speaker. This is where video is very much better than audio. It's probably easier to cheat on the audio, but it's not easy to cheat on the video because what happens is that we get a little bit of the vital energy, little bit of the feeling that comes with the person. And with that, even with that little bit of feeling, you will see in your gut how something will feel right and something will feel wrong. Like most of the things that pharmaceuticals, for example, who try to sell various things on the TV, as soon as they start talking about the side effects, listen carefully and will completely be turned off by what the pharmaceuticals are saying about their product, because the product is clearly harmful to you because it has so much of side effects. So you don't have to listen to these things. Listen to your gut. Listen to your feeling. Listen to your experience. That's what the best guide for us is, and the true guide. You cannot cheat the gut. If the gut feeling that this is safe for me, this is secure for me, if that gut feeling doesn't come, if the feeling of love doesn't come in the expansion of the heart, if the feeling doesn't come in the throat that this is the right expression, you don't need to trust whatever is producing the feeling of wrongness in you. So learn to feel. Learn to feel in your chakras. It's not just a brain phenomenon. It's also in the chakras. You have to start feeling it in your organs, in the region of your chakras.
It's what a powerful, powerful way to look at life, to live life. Folks, you could easily listen as you hear Dr. Mitka Swami speak. You could see why he has really become such a recognized leader in getting you to understand how science and spirituality can be integrated in regular life. You can see why his books are bestsellers and why Quantum Activist is absolutely fantastic. I want you to check out Mick Goswami's website, quantumactivist.com. Tell other people about the great work Dr. Goswami is doing. And Mick Goswami, this hour went by super fast. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your insight and wisdom with our listeners.
Thank you, Steve. It has been good.
Folks, I want you to make sure you check out Amit Goswami's website, quantumactivist.com. That's quantumactivist.com. Always a pleasure, Dr. Amit Goswami. We always feel like we could talk for another 5 hours just scratching the surface of all this, all the stuff Dr. Goswami has to share with us. Hey, make sure you check out his books. Make sure you check out the website. We love supporting authors like this, and he's really at this understanding where he really is sharing with you this bridge that connects the science and spirituality. I love reading his work, love having conversations with him, so make sure you check out quantumactivist.com. Folks, we've reached the end of the show. I want you to be inspired to participate in your life today, participate in your dreams today, participate in learning, sharing, helping others learn, helping others share, inspiring people with your actions. Inspire. I know that I speak a lot. I do a show and I'm a speaker, but I promise you that the greatest sermons, the greatest seminars I have ever given have been delivered in the silence, the dedicated silence of my actions. Speak with your actions today. Speak your dreams to life. Speak your goals. Speak them to life today. You are better than any of your circumstances. You are better than anyone who's ever bet against you. You are better than all the nonsense you're telling yourself, the limiting lies you're telling yourself. You are better than that. You are stronger than that. You're designed for success. This universe is conspired, designed and conspired for your success. Go out there today and live accordingly. And when you're doing so, don't forget, this New Yorker loves you. Check out our website, stevemaraboli.com, empoweredlivingradio.com. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on YouTube. Get out there and participate. You're listening to Empowered Living. I'm Steve Maraboli. We'll see you next time.
A Better Today would like to thank you for listening to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free.